The new book, After Mandela, provides a sobering portrait of a country caught between a democratic future and a political meltdown. Douglas Foster, leading South Africa Authority with early unprecedented access to President Zuma and to the next generation in the Mandela family, traces the nation's entire post-apartheid arc. Foster tells this story not only from the point of view of the emerging black elite, but also drawing on hundreds of rare interviews over a six-year period from the perspectives of ordinary citizens, including an HIV-infected teenager living outside of Johannesburg and a homeless orphan in Cape Town. Douglas Foster is an associate professor at Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism, is a contributor to The Atlantic, New York Times Magazine, Los Angeles Times, and the Smithsonian, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Douglas Foster to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
It's good to be with you.
It's a fascinating book. What brought you to this subject?
I lived in West Africa as a child. My father worked for the Peace Corps, and I'd always wanted to go back, but I sort of fell into this story. I was running a program to take students who study in our program to work in newsrooms in South Africa, and I actually, to be honest about it, thought I'd drop them off and go on to some place like the Congo or Rwanda that might generate more exciting stories. And what I discovered was a new democracy, one of the globe's newest democracies, struggling to establish itself more firmly. And I got hooked on that story, is the short way to tell you.
In the sense of when we think of South Africa, it can, as simply put as your title of your book, be looked at before Mandela and after Mandela.
I mean, he's the big global figure. If you're in my generation, you grew up seeing his portrait held up in demonstrations in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. The arc of his story is an astonishing one, going from coming from a rural area, becoming a well-known lawyer, becoming a guerrilla and designated as a terrorist, being sentenced to 27 years in incarceration. Coming out of that and then being elected as the first black president of a democratic new country. Astonishing story. But that's half the story in the making of a new democracy, of course. He steered it through the first 5 years as the first democratically elected president of the new country. And there have been 18 years under this new dispensation. So lots of other people have done the heavy lifting to try to make what was his campaign slogan in 1994, peace, jobs, justice, into a reality.
What is fascinating in the book is you point out that half of the population of South Africa is under the age of 25. 50% then of the citizenry only know Nelson Mandela as a free man.
That's right. That's right. The so-called born frees, and then those who are slightly older, have grown up and have expectations built on the promise of the early 1990s and the election of 1994. And it's a worthy reference point for those of us who are looking at other parts of the world, because in the U.S. the median age is 37, right? So we expect to see those middle ages be dominant in a way, both in the culture and in the politics. In the developing South, people are younger, less educated, and have these expectations of promises that were made in the case of South Africa 18 years ago.
So how much of it, and I realize this is difficult, although you do a beautiful job in the book of putting this into terms, but in a short answer of how much do you get a sense of the caretakers of the future having a very real idea of the past and learning from both the successes as well as the mistakes in moving forward in that post-Mandela period?
I think the young people have a much better sense, both of the history and what needs to happen, than their elders give them credit for. That was one of the big revelations in the book for me, doing, you know, large interviews and then building a narrative out of the lives of six young people. I think they actually understand the history quite well. They also understand the constraints under which their country has been placed, because on the same day that democracy arrived in 1994, two other big world historic forces walked in the door at the same moment, more or less, and that's hitching back up to the global capitalist economy, and then the HIV pandemic arrives. So this has been a very tricky period to try to make the promises of 1994 come true when those two other factors were just tremendous cross pressures, is I guess the best way to put it.
How much is it in the hands of President Zuma, in the sense of how much power does he have, as opposed to how collaborative it is in coming up with a roadmap for the future?
That is a really great question, and I'm looking forward to being back there in the month of December, because it'll help me answer it better. But here's my take. He doesn't have as much executive power as a president in the United States, for example. He does come from the background of a movement that's very collective in nature, believes in the collective quality of leadership, and he's also under heavy attack now, faces an election within the party in December that will determine whether he continues to be president of the party, and also 2 years later whether he'll continue to be head of state. So I would say his powers at the moment are not inconsequential, but they're somewhat more limited than, say, the powers of President Obama to get things done.
What has improved in the country? When you write about the homeless teenagers on the streets of Cape Town and the crusading doctors fighting against communicable diseases, what is being, have we seen great improvement in any area?
Yes, I think the main thing is that people grow up knowing that they will have a vote on leadership in the land they were born in. And that dichotomy, that split between you live here, but you're not allowed to call yourself a citizen here for the vast majority of black South Africans, has changed. And along with that comes a kind of cultural and political and social shift. On the economic front, it's been very tough. Unemployment among black young people is as high as, black young men is as high as 75%. That makes it very tough to make the case that political freedom has brought the measure of economic and social justice that is required. On HIV in particular, after a long lag under the leadership of President Mbeki, there have been marked improvements under this administration, particularly because of the leadership of a visionary health minister who has rolled out treatment much more aggressively, and I think we're beginning to see a leveling off of the rate of new infections in a place that was hit harder by HIV than any other place on the globe.
Do you, when you look at this country and diplomatically, what role has the United States played in this story?
Well, I think, as you surely know, the United States under President Reagan was, along with the British, one of the governments that held out support for the white racist apartheid regime. And then alongside that, we had a very active anti-apartheid movement. So there's a kind of mixed record in the past. I would say for the past three presidents, there has been quite a warm relationship, Pretoria to Washington, D.C., pretty bipartisan support for being supportive and for President George W. Bush's PEPFAR program to help on the AIDS front. So I think there's a lot of goodwill there in direct relationships. I think on a more global scale, The South Africans and the U.S. have been at loggerheads over things like the Iraq War and Middle East policy in general. There's a kind of identification, particularly by the liberation movements, with Palestinian rights. So on the world stage, there have been notable areas of agreement, like at the climate change conference, and notable areas of disagreement, particularly where the U.S. intervenes militarily.
The name of the book is After Mandela, The Struggle for Freedom in Post-Apartheid South Africa. The book is published by William Norton. It is a great pleasure to have Douglas Foster on our program to share his insight and expertise. Thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
That was a great conversation. Thanks to you for the good question.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is After Mandela, The Struggle for Freedom in Post-Apartheid South Africa. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.